Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
I have no reason to say that the Cubs are going to win a road series, but I think they're going to win a road
this
series.
This is the road series you win.
It has to be.
It's against the Pirates while they're suspending players and fining coaches and fighting amongst each other.
A swing and a ground ball is short. Baez has it, throws to Rizzo, and the Cubs win the ball game. A much-needed win for the Cubs here at PNC as they beat the Buccos by a score of 2-0.
The 0-2 pitch to Cabrera. Swing and a miss. Strike three and the ball game is over. And the Cubs have beaten the Pirates and won the series 2 out of 3. Their first road series win in 3 months.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
It is Bernstein and McKnight, and we are on the Score. I'm Connor. Mark Grody is in for Dan Bernstein this morning, and we have the exquisite pleasure of broadcasting from Bryn Mawr Country Club for Joe Madden's charity golf tournament. We're out here today celebrating a Cubs off day, a Cubs road series win, and it's one hell of a morning. Mark, thanks so much for stepping in. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
It is a blast to be here, and what an honor as well on a day in which the Cubs finally win a road series of the day after the weekend in which they take 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh and in Williamsport as well. Yeah, it's a beautiful, sun-kissed day out here at Bryn Mawr, and I am lathered and bathed in a combination of Copper Tone 30 and Copper Tone 50, and I wish you guys would take a little bit of protection.
You smell like the beach, my friend. you smell like a vacation.
Oh.
You smell like a child at Myrtle Beach. It's just a whole thing right now for you.
It feels right, and a shout-out to the guys inside the clubhouse here, where, you know, things can be a little bit pricey at times
inside
a clubhouse, and I went in and said I'd like to buy this Copper Tone here, and he just looked at me and said, yeah, go ahead, take it, go ahead. I was like, all right, very good. So I've got this Copper Tone 30 over here.
I'm going to go ask him for a driver later, see if he's got the same policy. Mark is in for Dan. Plenty to do on the show today. Of course, the Bears have played their second preseason game, and it was ostensibly football. James Vaughters has been named the Ken Mastroli Award winner, and he will join us at 9:40 and accept his exquisite award. James is a pretty damn good football player coming up through high school and in college, and has really showed out. We are going to get to at some point later on in the show, because here at Joe Madden's charity golf outing, we've got some guests rolling around the golf course. We expect to talk to some Cubs luminaries, some former players, some coaches, all that kind of stuff. We're going to do that this morning. But when we get to our Bears conversation, Mark Grody, the sideline reporter at BBM, is going to have 4 Bears things for you. Because if anything, Mark Grody is the guy that can take something from that Bears' second preseason game.
Yeah, I did. I found – so my goal had been to find 5 real things that occurred in the Bears' game against the Giants. Because, you know, that's what we all do now, 5 things
five
that
things.
Mattered. And I could only find 4 things that actually mattered from the second preseason game. So I was really pressing. I was going to just like come up with something for the 5th, but just make up something, and it would have been totally disingenuous on my part. I just said, you know what? We're going to stick with 4. So yeah, at 11 o'clock, I will have, from my observations from the sidelines at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, I will give you 4 things that I honestly think plays that mattered in that game and may affect the team this year, good and bad.
I love that you were going for 5 and gave it the old college try, landed with 4.
That is
the NFL preseason.
I had a moment with myself. I was like, you know what, Mark? You don't have to do this. You don't have to add a 5th. It's okay. Take a deep breath, kid.
You really don't.
Relax.
10 o'clock, we're going to talk to Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune. He is a regular guest here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're going to talk to him at 10 o'clock about what he observed from this Bears game. And, of course, there are some headlines and some news that the Bears made coming out of that game. They have I wouldn't say resolved their kicker situation, but they've made a decision in releasing Elliott Fry and sticking with Eddie Pinheiro, so that matters a little bit. You remember Rich Campbell was the guy that for 4 weeks kept giving us Kare Vedvik, Kare Vedvik. People kept on saying Kent Phelps, Kent Phelps. Kare Vedvik was going to be the guy who hit the first Bears field goal. They tried. They tried very hard. But he is now with the Minnesota Vikings. So Rich knows a thing or two about how the Bears are approaching their kicker situation.
Yeah, and I think that Eddie Pinheiro won, this is just my opinion, that Eddie Pinheiro won the kicking job when the Bears had the practice at Soldier Field. It was family night going into the night. I thought actually that Elliott Fry had had a slight edge. But Eddie Pinheiro that night was 12 for 12. Obviously, it was far from a real scenario of a game, but afterwards he said it felt like a real game to him, and he just kicked the heck out of the football at Soldier Field, where there had been some problems with the kicking last year.
Just so a couple.
And honestly, I thought, like, at the beginning of Bourbonnais or throughout Bourbonnais, it felt like it was Elliott Fry was in the edge. And the only reason I say that is because he had had more attempts until that night at Soldier Field when Eddie Pinheiro was 12 for 12. So, yeah, I mean, I give some credit to the Bears because they it seems like out of the eight or nine guys that they had in OTAs that they pared it down to the right two guys because both comported themselves really well throughout the preseason so far, and it looked to me like Eddie Pinheiro was slightly the better out of the two.
So even though Totes McGroats is here for Dan Bernstein, we remain in our regularly available ways. Twitter.com is at Bernstein_MCK. You can email the show at Bernstein and McDowell. You must, you just have to download the radio.com sports app. Download it already, and that you can, way you can stream the show. You can find your other favorite score shows and all the other radio.com sports content that is getting pushed out and over through your ears and into your brain about your sports. You can as well get in touch with the show by phone, 312-644-6767, and of course, text 67011. You text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. You can watch us. Brian Gertz has brought the video feed out to the golf course. That's watch670thescore.com. And of course, you can go to Facebook, just like the Score's Facebook page, and then you are involved in all of that glorious, glorious conversation. So, like I say, a lot of Cubs guests, a lot of Cubs presence here as we're out at Joe Madden's Cubs charity golf outing. Thrilled to be out here for a second straight season. But, you know, Grody, you heard it in the open. Joe Ostrowski was in for Dan on Friday. Dan remains in Saskatchewan, where extradition is really difficult. And it turns out, apparently, his fishing trip is going exceedingly well. He's catching all sorts of toothy fish and hauling them back into the boat and then releasing them with the utmost care. So good
for him. He looks jolly. He looks jolly out there on his little boat with his little jacket and his little hat and his little fishing pole.
Can I be real honest with you? I saw, you can go follow him if you want to on Twitter. It's really on you.
Keep it.
But I saw the picture. I mean, he boated a monster. I mean, just this gigantic fish. And my first thought wasn't, oh, I'm so happy for Dan. It was, I'm going to have to listen to this story four times over the next week when he gets back. And I don't know if I have it in me to listen to it four separate times.
Right. And if you read what he tweeted, he's like speaking a fishing language, and I don't speak fishing. And he's talking about a naked lure with a bobber.
No, he was naked when he caught it.
He was.
He was
right.
Very nude.
Which you're going to have to hear about now all year long as well. So you're going to have to hear about all that very soon.
So Joe was in Friday. He let you know that the Cubs were, I don't know, interesting to bet in their series against the Pittsburgh Pirates over the weekend. And I suppose if you'd bet all three for the Cubs to come in as winners, you would have taken home a few dollars. They have won. It had been 84 years since the Cubs' last road series win. Good for them. Happy to see it. Wonderful.
84 years? Did you just
felt
say
that way to me? Didn't it feel that way to you?
It did.
It's like the old lady from Titanic just screaming about the olden days. Or Goose Gossage thinking everything was better back in the day.
Goodness.
It had been a long damn time since the last time that they had won a road series, the end of May, in fact. So finally, you get yourself a road series win. Finally, you hold on to a couple of leads, though last night was dicey, and the first lead you had in game one of the series, you let slip away with some bad bullpen performances. You've got guys coming back healthy some, I think. Wilson Contreras seems somewhat close or able to come back at some point this season. I just, you know, after this series, after the whole road trip, I keep thinking to myself the same thing, that this division is the 86-87 win division that we've always kind of thought it was going to be, or at least since the first 2 months of the season. It's going to take monumental starting pitching performances for the Cubs to win their playoff series, for the Cubs to get to a pennant, for the Cubs to win a pennant, if they were to win a World. I mean, that's what it's going to take. You're going to have to rely on Jose Quintana and Yu Darvish and Kyle Hendricks, and you have to rely on the fact that John Lester has hopefully gotten things back together after his rough early August stretch like he always has, and then you're hoping for Cole Hamels to figure out whatever it is in the kinetic chain that's got his mechanics out of whack. You are going to need big-time starting pitching, and that's different from saying, oh, good pitching wins a playoff series, because these days it's whoever migrates into the bullpen. It's whatever dudes find their home out of the bullpen and just breathe fire late in games. It's different for these Cubs. They need that starter to go six or seven.
I thought that the John Lester performance was in this series. It was one of his most important this year because he gets into those jams, big jams, men on with nobody out in the fifth and sixth innings, and he's able to wiggle out. And that's always something. I mean, you don't want any pitcher getting guys on, but, you know, going back to 2015, the first year that John Lester was here, and therefore, one of the things that he's always been really good at is collecting himself when he gets guys on base. He had stumbled in that capacity a few times earlier this year, but that was more John Lester. He also has come to a realization, and he talked about it after that game, that he can't blow guys away with the fastball, that it's not clocking at 94, 95 like it was in 2015. And he said that. And that's I think that's a tough moment for any pitcher, for any baseball player, when they realize, okay, I don't have the capacity to do whatever it is anymore, so I'm going to adjust. He said it out loud, and I think that that's going to help him going forth. And it's I was glad to hear that because I wondered about that too. Like is he like any guy that has velocity? Eventually, you're going to have to adjust. And I've always thought that Lester would last a long time in Major League Baseball.
So did the Cubs,
right?
When they signed him, that was part of the conversation when the contract was reported.
Because he relies on the corners. He relies on good umpiring, quite frankly.
Well, he's left-handed, too.
Yeah, there is that part as well. So that was incredibly important. And then you have Jose Quintana, who, again, he's been terrific, particularly in the last two games. The 14-strikeout performance, obviously. And then the game last night as well. 7 shutout innings, 5 hits, 7 strikeouts, 0 walks. And one of the things was that even when he hasn't lost a game in nearly 2 months, but early on in this run, he was getting run support. So it was kind of hard to tell how good he actually was, because sometimes that allows you to calm down. But the last two games, he's really shown me, with the higher strikeout numbers and where he has been locating the baseball, that he is legitimately on target right now.
You make a great point about Jose Quintana. You remember when he got shellacked by the Mets back on like the 22nd of June, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was just 4 1/3, and I think it was 16 dozen runs or something. 9 starts for him, 54 2/3 innings, 57 strikeouts, 7 walks. He's given up 5 home runs, a 2.96 ERA, and opponents are slugging just .386 against him, an on-base percentage of .263. He's really been fantastic, and I think you could probably look at his last month of pitching, his last 3-4 starts, and say that's the best stretch, the most impressive stretch he's had as a member of the Cubs.
Absolutely.
And it probably goes back, you know, to his really stellar 2015 run with the White Sox. I mean, that's the kind of run that he's on. And I just, you know, this is a team that gets it done a little bit, when it gets it done, a little bit differently than some of the other powerhouses in this league. Sure, you know, the Nationals will get Max Scherzer back and they'll have big-time pitching. And the Astros now go Verlander and then Cole and then Greinke, and that's terrifying, you know, at the top of the rotation. But they hadn't done that all year long. You know, they just picked up Greinke and they had 2 at the top. They need to get it done with 5 starters. And that's the thing we talked about this a little bit last week. It's worrisome in a way, because once you get to a playoff series, if it's a best-of-5, you're taking one of those starters, a piece of your strength, a thing that makes you better in that area than other teams, away from you, because you're not going 5 starters,
right?
You know, you're not handing it over. I mean, somebody, one of those first 3 should have a pretty good start, and you'll go back to that guy in game 5 if you can. You know, I mean, this is how a modern playoff series work.
My top three right now, I'm just thinking about this as you're
I wrote these down, too.
Okay.
I wrote these down, too.
Good. Let's do this. My number one is Kyle Hendricks.
Okay.
My number two is Yu Darvish. I'm gonna go you on you. My number three right now is, man, and this was this he clinched it last night. It's Jose Quintana, because it would not have been. It would not have been because just because the run support that he had had sort of masked that a little bit.
Yeah.
I go John Lester right now. John Lester, number four. And right now, stat. I go Cole Hamels, number five.
So I would change it a little bit.
Okay. That's what this is about, Connor. Having different opinions.
It is,
and
it is.
You know, just two guys talking baseball.
Two guys yakking a little baseball here. I would change it some. I know this is good. I'm going to say this now. And if you told me 2 years ago, like 18 months ago, that I was actually going to really believe it, I probably would have come through time and slapped myself in the face. I'd start Darvish in game one.
Okay.
I really would. I'd start Darvish in game one because of this, too. I don't know how healthy this bullpen will eventually get. I don't know. No one does, obviously. I don't think Brandon Morrow comes back. Craig Kimbrell seems able to have an implosion every now and again. If I start Darvish in game one, if I'm the Cubs, that means I know that he's the guy that will be ready to come back out of the bullpen fastest. And I think that's the guy, as crazy as it sounds, I think that's the guy that I need to have as an option somewhere in the bullpen if this series gets hairy in games four or five by Cracky. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is... If you need strikeouts, you know, if you have to have the put-away kind of thing happen...
Still the only guy.
Darvish is the guy that right now you'd point to and go, this is, okay, that's the guy that you need to have as a weapon out of this bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, and then you think about a one-game wild card, and I'd probably still, like today, go with Kyle Hendricks, but I don't have a problem with you going Darvish. I mean, it's great that we're actually able to say that based on what happened last year. So who's the rest? You got a full top five?
Yeah, I'd go Darvish, Hendricks, Q. I think is
okay.
the way I'd set
all
it
right.
up.
And then at the back end, Lester and then Cole Hamels.
Lester and Hamels. Although, you know, to things go right, Hamels could launch himself into that top conversation. I mean, he did last season. He recovered his mechanics and found some velocity. That's, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I thought Cole Hamels was the Cubs' best player in the first half of the season. An ERA under two, some big-time games, in particular against the St. Louis Cardinals at home against Wrigley Field. And, you know, some people say, is he just lost it? No, there's no way Cole Hamels had lost. So what he had in the first half was excellent. He's going to have, I think he will get some semblance of that back for sure.
Still a lot to do in the show. Segment, by the way, brought to you by Gerber Collision and Glass. There's still a lot more Cubs to get to. Obviously, there was the series against the Pirates. There was the Sunday night broadcast last night that happened. And believe it or not, I thought that was the most tolerable of the Sunday night broadcasts I've seen in a long time.
Well, yeah, we'll get to it, but I was longing for something that I didn't get at one point in this game.
Okay, they also made a move, an October is always move. Albert Almora Jr. goes down to AAA. Addison Russell is up. We got to get to that as well. But when we come back, one of Mark Grody's friends, James Waters, is going to join us. He is the second award winner, the second Ken Mistroli award winner of this preseason. We've got hardware to hand out, and Waters is going to join us on the other side. It's Bernstein and McKnight live at Joe Madden's Try Not to Stuck Respect 90 Celebrity Golf Classic. We're going to have some Cubs guests all throughout the morning. A little Bears talk next with James Waters on 670 The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Your Ken Mistroli Award winner is...
James Waters.
A pressure on Daniel Jones. It was knocked away and stripped. What a play by James Waters. Second week in a row that he's got a ball in his hands.
Yeah, last week he jumped on the fumble recovery.
Look at Khalil Mack out there.
He comes out. Hey, you gotta love it.
Congratulations.
James Waters.
The man, the legend, it is his hour. James Vaughters, linebacker for the Chicago Bears, has been named the second recipient of the Ken Mastroli Award here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Mark Grody's in for Dan. I'm Connor, and joining us right now is Chicago Bears linebacker James Vaughters. James, congratulations. That's a hell of a 2 weeks of football for you. Well done, sir. I imagine you got to be feeling pretty well about how you're playing right now.
Appreciate it, Connor. Appreciate it, Mark. Yeah, I'm just trying to have as big an impact as I can on the team's performance. I really appreciate it.
James, from my view down on the sideline, and I've been wanting to ask you this. I'm standing right behind you. You and Kylie Fitz and Isaiah Irving and Chuck Harris, your fellow outside linebackers, are all gathered round, not a coach, but Khalil Mack, who is schooling you guys up, giving you a pep talk, and I see you asking questions and him giving the answers, and then you go out there and do what you did. How valuable is that information coming from number 52?
Well, I mean, you know, it's the most valuable, especially in the game the way it is right now. He's one of the best that does what we all do as a responsibility to the team. So, you know, anytime we can get advice, anytime we can get tips, anytime we can get pointers from a guy like that, it's just great to have a guy like that in the room. It's just great to have a guy like that on the sideline. It's hard to say that, you know, you'll have that anywhere else and that I've had that anywhere before.
And then I kind of laugh right after you make the play. You come over to the sideline. Everybody is, you know, high-fiving you and hugging you and all that kind of stuff. You take your seat on the bench, and then it was like the coaches start to line up. Ted Monachino, the outside linebackers coach, comes, sits next to you, shows you something on the Microsoft pad. Right after that, I think Chuck Pagano came and sat down next to you, showed you something. Were they praising you or saying, yeah, that was great, but here's what else you should have done?
There's a little bit of both. You know, there's more than one play in a drive. You have that play, and then you have multiple other plays. So you have things that you can fix, but you also have things that you get praised for. It's just like any other drive, really. Just with one extremely, extremely high moment in it.
Talking with Bears linebacker James Vaughters here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. He is our second recipient of the Ken Mastroli Award for his meritorious service in a preseason game. James, I want you to, if you can, and I would love to know how much you remember of the strip sack of Daniel Jones. Can you step me through when, because you catch the double team, and it's like an inside swim. At what point do you realize you've got a chance at not just the quarterback, but taking the ball away? Is there a step where you realize, oh, I've got this, or is it all instinct and you just kind of come away with the football?
It all happened pretty quickly. I came off the ball, and as soon as the chip happened, I think I blinked my eyes for a little bit. And then as soon as I opened them, I see nothing but, you know, green grass and the quarterback, and it hit the ground running. So it all happened pretty quickly, but that's reaching out with that right hand when we're coming off the left side is something we practice every day. It's something that coach talks about every day in practice. So sometimes those things just happen naturally. And I saw the ball right there, and I just reached my hand out and grabbed it. Luckily enough, it came out and bounced right to me.
James, in some way, shape, or form, you've been in on three of the five Bears turnovers so far in the preseason. How important is that, and how much is that being stressed in this Chuck Pagano run defense?
It's a cultural thing. He wants to build a culture of thinking about takeaways at practice and thinking about takeaways in games. And we have players that have done that already in the past. So it's almost like two strong forces just coming together, just really understanding the importance of taking the ball away as a defense. So it's good to do those things in practice and then finally see them manifest in the game.
So, James, I'm looking through some of the headlines around town right now, and your name's featured in a lot of the Bears' coverage, asking whether or not the Bears have found a linebacker that can really step up and take advantage of the depth chart and put yourself in a position to play. In your mind, what will it take from you to get to that position, to get to that place where you're really part of this, part of the depth of an elite core of linebackers?
You know, I'm sorry. That's a question that's way above me. But all I can do is try to make as many plays as I can every week and try to play within the defense as best I can every week. You know, fortunately, we have a great organization that is of the highest quality, and I just feel blessed to have the opportunity to play for them. So, you know, going into these last two preseason games, it's just a matter of thinking about the next play, not the last play, and trying to make them my best.
And James, you've had an interesting path here. You played your college ball at Stanford, and then you had a couple of years in the CFL with the Calgary Stampeders. What was life like in the CFL, and what did you take away from that?
Well, I haven't played outside linebacker in American football for my entire life. When you play outside linebacker, you end up learning a lot of different skills, dropping the coverage, playing special teams, rushing the passer, setting the edge. But when I got up to the CFL, where you're running basically a nickel defense at all times, you set the edge once with a three down football game. You set the edge once, and then it's pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. So when I was up there, I was able to get the most reps I could as a pass rusher, and I was able to, you know, learn from veteran guys that had been up there for a long time, Micah Johnson, Junior Turner, Cordero Law, and just kind of, you know, just see every day the way they go about rushing the passer and seeing what skills they've built up over their careers up there. And a lot of those guys are guys that have played in the NFL as well, so it was just a great developmental opportunity for me, as well as just having a great time. I mean, we went to two championships, won one of them, got a bunch of players, coaches that just love the game and that are very experienced in the game. So from a developmental standpoint, it was probably one of the best things that I could have done given my situation.
James, the rest of your path has been the Packers as an undrafted free agent, then the Patriots, like you say, the Stampeders, the Chargers, and now the Bears. I'm wondering, in what way does it stand out to you that the Bears linebacker room is different from other rooms that you've been in where it's just your positional group?
I mean, it's hard to say because there's so many great players that were in those locker rooms when I was in those locker rooms. I mean, when I was with Green Bay, there was Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers in there. When I was in New England for a short time, we had Jabal Sheard and other players like that up there. So it's like, you know, fortunately, I've had the opportunity to be around some great players, and those years are forming. Even encouragement from those players are forming, because I think the toughest times of all of those was the year after I was with the Patriots, where, you know, I sat down at home for that entire offseason, and I trained every single day at home at my old youth football field four times a week, just waiting for a tryout for the entire 2016 season. So being able to get encouragement from players that I know football and I know have performed at the highest level is just something that really stamps in your mind through the toughest times of, you know, being a professional athlete. And I really appreciate that.
That's huge, man. You want to give any shout-outs? I mean, I know it takes a lot and a hell of a relationship with somebody to be there through a time like that. Who was big for you?
I'd really say my family. My family more than anything, and some of my closest friends. You know, they know who they are, people that, you know, during that time that I talk to every day. My dad, some of my closer friends from college, some of my closest friends from high school, just having people that believe in you, because if not, sometimes the game will make you stop believing in yourself to a certain extent, and you'll feel like, you know, your fate's in somebody else's hands. But there's so much power on the end of that perseverance, and there's so much to gain as far as wisdom goes from going through situations like that, and they catapult you into the rest of your life and can think. Thankfully, they can affect all the people around you as far as inspiration goes, because that's my only goal at this point, is to just inspire the people that are around me as best I can, because, you know, what's going on is a lot bigger than I am, a lot bigger.
That's awesome, man. as far as relationships go, I mentioned some of your teammates that, you know, obviously you're going to be around Kylie Fitz and Isaiah Irving and Chuck Harris. It looked like, just from me watching you guys on the sideline, that there's a great bond between you guys, kind of busting on each other a little bit. Have you had fun with those guys, and is there a guy that stands out as the best personality of that crew?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's just a collective thing. Like, I mean, it's good to be in a program where guys encourage each other and guys try to help each other as best they can. Like, because at the end of the day, like, whatever happens on game day, and, you know, whatever the organization decides. But, you know, as a professional football player, you learn to live in the moment. You learn to be a great teammate through and through. And I really appreciate to come into a room where I feel like that's valued as much as anywhere that I've been.
James, really appreciate you coming on with us. Congratulations. The hard work seems to be paying off. Keep it up and enjoy that third preseason game, man.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you guys, Connor and Mark. Appreciate it.
Vaughters, outside linebacker for the Chicago Bears and the second recipient of the Ken Mastrolli Award for preseason toughness and overall dudeness and football playingness. That's, I think those are the official titles. Dan leaves those out a lot when he ever gives the award out, but those are the official things you get awarded the James, the Ken Mastrolli for.
Strip sack and a recovery the other night against the New York Giants. I always love guys that have had CFL experience. They always have a story. They always have a great story, and they always take something different away. I mean, it's 2 years. And it seems like they've all won titles, too.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that played in the CFL.
Oh, yeah. Like 7 or 8 of them in 2 years, because I don't really know how the CFL schedule works.
Right. Every coach that has coached there has, like, 8. Like, Mark Trestman has titles. Mm-hmm. Doug Flutie has titles. Anybody that's ever played in a league other than the National Football League has 3 or 4 titles. So congratulations, James.
You figure, too, if you could pin down Ryan Pace, and he actually wanted to talk, you could ask whether or not, like, those linebackers, guys like Vaughters, who have spent some time in there, you know, James mentioned, we're in the nickel all the time.
Yes.
So is the NFL now.
Right, that's a great point.
The nickelback is a starter now in the NFL, more or less. I mean, they're playing 85, 86% of the time. And now you've got a linebacker who understands how to work through some of those progressions and responsibilities. That's job training. You know, that didn't happen in years prior.
Speaking of that, one of the guy who may be having the best preseason of anybody for the Bears in Bourbonnais quietly has been Buster Skrine, a guy that, like, he was like easy pickings in the beginning of the season, like choose a weakness on the defense. It's like, well, I don't know. Bryce Callahan's gone. You're bringing in this guy, Buster Skrine. Skrine has been terrific. And even if he had missteps in the past, I'm talking about on the field, when you have a front seven like you have with the Bears, and he referred to it as the best front seven in which he has ever played, that you're going to make plays. And Skrine so far has been adept at that in the right spots, has had a couple of interceptions throughout the time. So he's been really good. Duke Shelley could show up in that nickel spot some this year for the Bears. So I think that's a position of promise for sure for the Bears.
He's Mark Grody in for Dan Bernstein. We are going to combine his Bears knowledge with that of Rich Campbell, the Chicago Tribune. It's going to be a whole lot of Bears when we come back. Bears. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.